Support for the Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Here's a classic riddle. I have many layers, but no clothes to wear. I make you cry, but no tears to share. I add flavor to your food, but have no taste myself. I grow underground, but have no roots of wealth. What am I? Well, the answer is an onion. The onion is as old as cooking itself. It helped humanity grow and develop civilizations. It inspired early thoughts of the nature of the universe. Yet today, we look down on the onion and we go through the drive-through window. We tell the guy to hold the onions. Mark Kurlansky, though, is holding the onion high, and he's praising it. His latest book is The Core of an Onion. And Mark, welcome to The Source.
Well, thank you. Nice to talk to you.
So I'm sure, because you've written so many books that are all, like, you know, really interesting and gripping, you know, the book about the cod and salt. People love those books. They're big sellers. I'm sure people are always asking you, like, what are you writing about now? What's your next book? And did you tell them, I'm writing about the onion, and what was their reaction?
Well, to my surprise, people seem to understand. the reason I wanted to write about an onion is that I thought they were kind of being underrated. They're very common. They're everywhere. But, you know, there's a difference between being common and being ordinary, and they're actually anything but ordinary. So I thought there was a story to be told.
It seems very divisive. When you talk to people about the onion, you get an immediate reaction out of people like, I love onions or I hate onions. They're pretty much already have decided which camp that they're in. And you have to wonder if the people who have decided that they don't like onions, they hate onions, if they've ever given it a real chance.
Well, I don't find that many onion haters. What I find is a divide is people who like raw onions and people who like cooked onions. Or actually everybody likes cooked onions, but only some people like raw onions. And historically, people who ate raw onions were always looked down upon. It was sort of a peasant thing to do. And there's all this writing in the Middle Ages. The English would go to Scotland and they'd report back that these people were really barbaric because they ate raw onions. And the Arabs thought the people of Palermo were dull-witted because they ate raw onions. And even in Don Quixote, Sancho Panza, Cervantes tells, or Don Quixote tells Sancho Panza not to stop eating raw onions because it makes him look like a peasant, which, of course, is what he is.
And so let me get the number here, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. You can send us an email to thesource@tpr.org. We'd love to hear from our listeners about your relationship to the onion. You maybe have never thought about it before, but you actually have a relationship to the onion. Maybe you grow them, maybe you stockpile them, or maybe you avoid them, but let us know what it's all about, because we'd love to hear your onion stories. What did people, when you tell them I'm writing about the onion, did people immediately think maybe you're writing about the satirical website? Let's get that out of the way.
No, you know, people, actually, this is my 38th book, you know, so yeah. I'm kind of a known quantity, and people just sort of say, oh, he's at it again, you know.
So I wonder, because your other book is like salt, cod, you know, it's like a one-word kind of a thing, and you put onion on there, but you said you went with the core of an onion.
Yeah, I can't have all one-word titles. Actually, it's my publishers who are always wanting me to do, you know, I did a few books that were bestsellers that had one-word titles, and now they always want me to do one-word titles, but I thought I'd mix it up a little.
This thing about the, you mentioned it earlier, just dig a little deeper into this, about how there's this cultural prejudice against the onion. I mean, there's a lot of cultures. I mean, the onion is everywhere, all the different cultures. But there is this, you know, a high culture, low culture thought about it, and people looking down on the onion. And do you think that's one of the main reasons why it is has lost its celebratory place at the kitchen table, that it is a relegated to, you know, as a side ingredient, but not the main ingredient?
Well, I mean, it's just so basic, and it has such a contribution to play to anything. Usually when you use it, you start with it. And I think that, you know, it's just such a basic ingredient that it can't be a star. But there actually are, you know, dishes that, you know, like roasted onions and grilled onions. And it does have its star dishes.
But people were like, you know, as they became wealthier, they would see why would, you know, the onion was like a food item that was more for the, because it was so inexpensive, it's easy to store. One of the great things about the onion is it's easy to store. And so that people who were, lower income throughout the ages, the serfs, the peasants, that they, it was their food. And you wanted to separate yourself from that.
Yeah, I mean, it's in Dickens. It's in the Portuguese writer Saramago talks about Portuguese peasants having onions for breakfast. And Dickens talks about the poor people eating onions. And it's a poor people food, but rich people eat it also. Everybody eats it. But, you know, the fact that it's so available, it was affordable, and it grows, you know, it grows in the tropics, and it grows in deserts, and it grows in Arctic and everywhere in between. So, you know, everybody has onions. And so, you know, it's just so commonplace, it doesn't get its due respect, I guess.
Right. And so, I mean, I said this in the intro, but, you know, verify that it's true that you are trying to, what, rehabilitate or reconstitute? What are you trying to do with the onion here?
Just get people to think about it and appreciate it, give it its due. I mean, what other vegetable has a defense mechanism? I mean, you mess with an onion and it spits sulfuric acid in your eye. A carrot won't do that. No other vegetable does that. It's really a unique thing.
Right. And so we're going to hit this break. When we come back, we'll talk about how onions will bring tears to your eyes, how that works. What are some of the, folklore about how to avoid that, a better way to chop an onion. And our phone lines are open. We'd certainly like to hear from our listeners about what they think about the onion, how they cook with it. If they have a really cool secret recipe about the onion, I'd love to hear it. Number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Send us an email to thesource@tpr.org.
Support for this podcast comes from Big Sun Solar, committed to helping businesses strive towards energy independence and conservation. Solar is a great way for businesses to lower their carbon footprint. More at bigsunsolar.com/TPR.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the onion with Mark Kurlansky. He's the author of The Core of an Onion, Peeling the Rarest Common Food, featuring more than 100 historical recipes. American journalist, author, has written over 30 books. His 1997 book, Cod, A Biography of the Fish That Changed the World, was an international bestseller, translated into more than 15 languages. So, Mark, how did the onion conquer the world?
Well, through trade routes, you know, because, as I say, it grows everywhere, and it also stores well, so it's good for trade. It travels well. And it originated, we're not sure exactly where, but somewhere like Pakistan or Uzbekistan or the Pamir Mountains into western Tibet, somewhere in that area. And a lot of trade routes went through there. And so it traveled, you know, to Europe and to Asia and eventually all over the world.
And so when did onions become domesticated? I mean, because there was it had to start out with a wild onion. What was that all about?
Well, here's the curious thing. I mean, there are many wild onions still around, but the wild onion that our cultivated onions come from is no longer around. So we don't really know exactly what it was, which is unfortunate because, you know, we can't see what humans developed and what was there before and what how these characteristics came about. It's like, if you really want to understand dogs, you have to look at wolves. But the onion wolf can't be found.
But in the course of its domestication, you know, making the commercial onion that we have today. So it's kind of weird how, you know, having grown onions myself in my garden, you know, you really see how an onion grows and produces and reproduces. And you learn that it has both the male and female parts. It doesn't need another onion. It's self-pollinating. How do you, that makes a challenge when it comes to trying to breed an improved onion, doesn't it?
Yes, because the way to breed plants or animals, for that matter, is to take males that have the characteristics you want to introduce and introducing them to females. And it's very difficult to do that with an onion because, as you say, it's self-pollinating. It has both male and female. So what they had to do is find a defective onion that only had female, what scientists call an emasculated onion. Great phrase, I think. And they found one in the early 20th century at UC Davis. And basically, all the hybrid onions started there.
And you're right about how during World War II, were we facing like an onion crisis in the United States? That we had been importing so many onions that we had to come up with more of a domestic, I mean, Catula, which is a nearby here, was producing onions and large numbers as a result of that.
Actually, had been for some time. I mean, Texas onions, they drove Bermuda onions out of Bermuda, actually. You know, the British eat a lot of onions, but never grew a lot. It was a colonial thing. They were considered a second-rate crop, and they looked for colonies to grow them in. And they grew them in Bermuda. And when there's a low sulfur content in the air and in the soil, you get a sweeter onion. And that's what these Bermuda onions were. So they became very popular. And then Texas started growing the same kind of onions, which they call their onions Bermuda onions. And the U.S. government slapped, this is after World War I, slapped a big tariff on Bermuda so that it was no longer economically feasible to sell Bermuda onions from Bermuda in the U.S. And everybody bought Texas Bermuda onions. And nowadays, a Bermuda onion is a Texas onion.
Let's go to a caller. Our number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. What's your relationship to the onion? We have Frank on the board. And Frank, you're on the air.
Well, thank you very much. In my culture, Hispanics, the onion is the basis of cooking for us. It's basically put into everything we ever make. It's a wonderful condiment.
Are you from Mexico, Hispanic? What cultural cooking?
Caribbean, Puerto Rico.
Okay.
And I'm married to a cute little Mexican lady, and they also use onions in just about everything, whether they're cooked or raw, chopped up. We are very attuned to using onions in all of our meals, except there's one drawback. I have a son who's allergic to onions.
Yeah, I've heard of that sometimes. It's somewhat unusual. But
thank you for the call, Frank.
It happens. And it's not only Latino culture. Almost all cultures, cooking starts with onions. I mean, certainly in Caribbean cooking and in Portuguese cooking and
Cajun
cooking. In most cooking, it begins with onions.
So you have to sweat the onions, as they say, as you get started on before you start make your pot of chili or whatever else it's going to be, etouffee. So you would, chop up the onion. So get into the chopped onion part. Let's talk about why there is this defense mechanism that you say for the onion. What is happening there? Why am I tearing up?
Because when... You can say when an onion feels attacked, like you stab it with a knife, it releases a gas, a sulfur-based gas of sort of unstable molecules, which drifts around and searches for moisture. And it finds moisture in your eyes. And when this gas meets moisture, it turns into sulfuric acid. And that hurts.
So what can people do? There's, myths. Hold a piece of bread in your mouth. What can you do?
Well, I'm convinced that the bread doesn't work. There's also put a wooden spoon in your mouth, which doesn't work. One thing that does have a little science to it is to chop onions next to a running faucet. Because remember, I was saying this gas seeks out moisture. So it will deflect some of that gas that's heading to your eyes to the faucet, but not entirely. It doesn't work 100%, but it helps. One thing that helps a lot that I'm surprised is rarely mentioned is to just wear glasses. And there is also something called onion goggles. You can get onion goggles. Some commercial kitchens use onion goggles, although, we live in an age where chefs want to look cool, and you never look cool when you're wearing goggles, So.
So do you develop an immunity or a resistance? Because it seemed like, when I first started cooking, I was tearing up more than I am now. Do you just get used to it?
Yeah, you get used to it. You just come to expect it. But you don't really get an immunity to it. You just accept this is what's going to happen. It's kind of interesting to think about how this was a defense mechanism against mammals, not particularly humans, but, rabbits and things. And if you have a garden, animals will get in and they'll eat your vegetables, but they won't eat your onions because humans are about the only mammal who's decided that it's worth the pain.
Right, and that's why sometimes I tell you to just kind of intersperse some onions in your garden here, there, and everywhere to try and confuse the animals.
Right.
Cover some scent that would maybe keep some of the pest away. So when I sweat the onions, when I'm cooking the onions, I throw it on the hot skillet. What's happening there? Because I'm going from the pungent, crispy onion to a softer, sweeter onion. What is happening?
Yeah, I mean, that's another interesting thing about onions is that they chemically change with heat and they lose their strong acidic aggression. And what happens is that onions are full of dextrose, which is a kind of sugar. and heat brings out the dextrose, and so they become sweet rather than strong.
And now you want them in your meals, in your food, whereas before you said many people will, or they'll accept an onion that's been cooked but not raw. That's the distinction.
Right. And when you look back historically at writings about onions, there's a lot of writers who tell you that this is what you have to do with an onion. You know, that an onion doesn't become edible until you cook it, which I would not agree with.
No.
I think raw onions are great in certain things.
I'm thinking like, you know, the caller we had before, Frank, talking about the Latino culture, you know, and pico de gallo is, you know, raw onion and with the chile and the tomato and, you know, it's delicious. And it's a raw onion thing they were putting, you know, eating right there.
Yeah, and actually Mexico, I mean, the Aztecs were among the first North Americans to eat the kind of onions that we do. I mean, they ate, Native Americans ate a lot of different kinds of wild onions, but the Aztecs and the central highlands of Mexico, they ate cultivated onions, very similar to what we do, that were not brought by the Spanish or by Europeans. And the rest of North America didn't have those kind of onions until Europeans brought them.
So the Europeans, what onion did the, like, were one of the Mayflower?
Well, you know, it's, I'm trying to remember if they actually had onions on the Mayflower.
Well, you know, maybe, you know.
soon after if they didn't. A lot of the onions that were used by Europeans in North America were called Spanish. And that's because they were the kind of onions that the Spanish brought. But also the English and the French, everybody brought these kind of onions. And so they became known as Spanish onions. And Spanish onion has become kind of a vague term nowadays because, I mean, you get a lot of Spanish onions in the United States, but the United States imports no onions from Spain.
Yeah, so when I go to the grocery store, I'm basically looking at three different onions. I have the red onion, I have this white onion, and I have the yellow onion. What should I be thinking? What's you know, about these, about this choice?
Well, I mean, first of all, you know, a lot of Americans are fixated on that idea of those three choices, but there's a lot of different kinds of yellow onions and different kinds of white onions. And different kinds of red onions. So it breaks down to a lot more than those three colors. And, you know, it depends on what you like. And in places where they grow onions, like in the Vidalia area of Georgia, I mean, people have a particular farmer whose onions they like because they're different from one farmer to another. Most of us don't, we haven't gotten that specific, but,
yeah, my taste buds aren't that sophisticated or subtle.
Right. But you probably have a store that has this bin of onions that you find you like, and you go there for your onions, right?
Oh yeah. Or I grow my own. We can talk more about that when we come back from the break. We didn't want to hear your onion stories. What's your relationship to the onion? Do you grow your own? Which ones are your favorite? What's your go-to onion? Or your go-to onion recipe? And if that's the star, where the onion is the star ingredient. Give us a call. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We'll continue talking about the core of the onion. We come back, and Matt, hang on. We'll get you on the air right after this quick break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay with us.
At TPR, we believe in delivering the news and stories you need in as many ways as possible. Our traditionalists love tuning into their radios to hear us, while others have ventured out to stream us online or through our TPR app. Another choice that's gained popularity is our TPR newsletter. We now have two. One is our weekly in-brief newsletter that is sent every Saturday with a roundup of the top stories from the week and highlights of past or upcoming TPR events. We also offer a weekday daily newsletter titled 321. This publication offers the latest news of the day. You can subscribe to one or both on our website at tpr.org. Stay in the know with the top TPR stories by subscribing today. And thanks.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Mark Kurlansky is with us. His latest book is The Core of an Onion, Peeling the Rarest Common Food, featuring more than 100 historical recipes. You can call in with your onion story. Give us a call. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And we have Matt on the line. And Matt, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, how y'all doing? Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I have to agree that the onion definitely is a unique and storied vegetable. I didn't like it as a kid myself, and then developed a respect and taste for it later as I understood how it changes taste when you cook it, et cetera. I guess my only among other trivial questions, what is putting the onion on a grill or, rubbing it on a grill as you start it, does that do anything specific, or is that just a tradition, just add flavor?
All right, Matt, thank you for the call. And Mark?
Yeah, well, it's onions have a very pronounced flavor, that's just one of many ways of starting off with onions to get that onion flavor into things. It gives a certain savoriness to a dish. It's considered essential for a lot of dishes. In Andalusia, they had an expression that a stew without onions is like a song without a tambourine.
I have a email that says, years ago, when he was working at a Chili's restaurant, I was a prep cook and I would cut 2 or 3 bags of onions a day. I would normally take the bag into the walk-in cooler because the cold air or the blower from the fan would relieve my eyes. That's from Lee. So if you took an onion and you had it in the refrigerator rather than at room temperature and began chopping it that way, would that provide some relief?
Yes, it seems to release less of that gas when it's cold. But I would suggest if you want to do that, just put the onions in the day before. The refrigerator isn't really a good place to store onions for a long term.
I have another caller. We have Rick on the line. And Rick, you're on the air.
Yes. Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah, Rick, you sound great. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes, I just wanted to share my experiences with onions as a child. I was particularly not liking of the crisp, sour taste of the onion. So I would always take them out of my burgers or whatever. And finally, my father had such a, he was like, they're good for you. Eat them, He made me eat a purple onion, And of course, it wasn't the whole onion. But like as a kid, just sitting there eating it. And eventually I realized, hey, this is good. The acidity is great. And, ever since then, loved onions. And I just, it takes a while to like them, but eventually when you do, my case, I like them.
Well, Rick, Rick, thank you for that. Thanks for calling in with that. So, Mark, when you're a child, and tell me if this is correct, it's my understanding that your taste buds are different when you are a child. And you are less able to tolerate harsh, acidic things. But as you grow older, suddenly jalapenos and onions, they taste good to you.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the taste. We adapt to sweetness real fast.
I think we're programmed to definitely seek out sweetness. I think we have taste buds on the outside of our face, around our cheeks, to detect sweetness as an infant to help us lock in when we're nursing.
Yeah, bitterness is the last one to get. And actually, it's the opposite of what you think. It's that kids have a stronger taste of bitterness than we do. Very strong bitter receptors. That's why kids don't like coffee. And then as they get older, we taste these things more mildly. And this may be true of onions, too. Although I liked raw onions when I was a kid. I mean, a lot of this is personal preference. Personally, sure. I don't think you have a good cheeseburger unless you have a slice of onion in there.
Yeah, but if people may think from a based on their childhood experience, I don't like onions, and now they're much older, maybe they should revisit that idea.
Yeah. Especially, you know, something like onions that's a strong flavor. We lose receptors as we get older and therefore are more open to strong tastes.
We got another caller here. We have Mary Jane. And Mary Jane, you're on the air.
Hi there. I'm a retired chef, and I just wanted to add a couple of quick notes. The first one being, not only as an earlier caller had mentioned that onions are the part of the foundation of Mexican cuisine and Puerto Rican cuisine, but it's also the basis of a lot of French and Cajun. There's something that we used to make called mirepoix in classic French cooking, and that's celery, carrot, and onion. And that's the basis for so many French dishes. And in the Cajun world, it's the Holy Trinity, which is green pepper, onion, and celery. And those things chopped up are the basis for almost everything wonderful you can put in your mouth over there. but another note is that sharp knives seem to really help with the if you have a really super sharp knife to cut your onion with, it really helps mitigate some of the eye irritation. So that's all I wanted to add. And you guys have a great day. Thanks for the show. It's really fun.
Well, Mary Jane, thank you for calling in. Appreciate that. Mark, I want to ask you about Hemingway's onion sandwich.
Yeah.
Okay, is this for real? What's in it? How did he make an onion sandwich?
You know, he wrote about it in Islands of the Stream. It was a raw onion and peanut butter sandwich that he claimed was his snack of choice when he went fishing in the Gulf Stream.
Have you tried that in your investigations?
I haven't tried it. Something tells me not to. I don't know.
Some things are just too forbidden to try.
I give recipes because I think they're interesting or well written, or they tell you something about culture. I'm not necessarily saying this would be great to eat. Some are, some aren't.
Yeah.
There's another onion sandwich recipe from James Beard in my book that I think is wonderful, which is oat bread spread with butter and then sardines and then a slice of raw onion. That's a great sandwich.
Well, James Beard had a onion sandwich, just no sardines, just onion. I mean, it was take the bread and with mayonnaise, thin slice of onion, and then...
Yeah, that's what the wonderful thing about James Beard was he had these enthusiasms that didn't have to do with any kind of snobberies or class distinctions. And one thing was that he loved raw onions.
And when people try that sandwich, they love it.
Yeah. No, it's great. It's great. I'd stay away from ham sandwich, though.
Hemingway sandwich a little bit too much. All right, we got to call. Let's go to Andrew on the line. And Andrew, you're on the air.
Hi, yeah. First time caller. Just new to NPR, loving it these last couple of months. But I wanted to say a lot of people, you know, when they go ahead and take a second attempt at trying onions, for me, it was the caramelized route that you guys had, you know, touched base on earlier. If you go the caramelized route, it's a great secondary introduction. Also, outside of just caramelizing them, you know, mincing them, really getting them, that texture is really what pulled me away from them early in life. So, you know, just mincing them, cooking them, It's always a great way to get back into onions. I enjoy them raw in certain sandwiches and meals now because of that. So, you know, if anyone's wondering, like, oh, onions as an adult, that's definitely the way to go if you're going to try it again.
All right. Well, Andrew, thank you for that. What are the nutritional values? We had one person write in saying that it's less vitamin C in onions. Do we know that there's a lot of vitamins in onions?
There are some vitamins in onions. Onions have all sorts of health properties attributed to them that really aren't true. I mean, this is going back thousands of years. The Greeks ate onions for strength before they went into battle, and also in Olympic games. And they spread they rubbed onion juice on them. As a former collegiate wrestler, I find it very disturbing.
There's the idea that putting onion juice in your hair will grow thicker hair.
Yeah, or prevent baldness. I'm pretty sure that doesn't work, you know. And I've checked with doctors about the claim that it reduces your blood sugar, and they generally say that this isn't true. There's, many things. Of course, with all of these things, it's inevitable that somebody would decide at some point that it's a great aphrodisiac. So in the Middle Ages, a famous Arab book said that it was an aphrodisiac. And the Catholic Church banned onions on holy days because they led to sex, which... may not be everyone's experience.
And you're right that they found onions in the remains in Pompeii, in a brothel in Pompeii. So the Romans also had that idea as well. We're going to take another break. Our phone lines are open. We're talking about onions. I want to talk about some of these wild recipes that you have, historical recipes that I definitely want to try. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. It's The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. At Texas Public Radio, we continue to do what public media has done for decades, bring people together to help make sense of the world. That's the commitment that's always guided our work and which remains central to our mission. We also believe it's important for everyone to be able to hear deeply researched and meticulously reported journalism. TPR is an essential public good that's freely available to everyone. Our commitment is to the truth, democracy, and building a more informed and enlightened public. We serve everyone, not just those who can pay. We ask for money so you and everyone in our community can hear the news regardless of how much money they have. There is no paywall here. We do need financial support, though, to provide this service. If donating to TPR is within your means, a monthly gift of $10 makes a big difference. Go to our website, tpr.org, or use the TPR app and hit the red donate button to give today. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Mark Kalansky's with us. His book is The Core of an Onion. I got an email from a listener saying in Egypt they eat raw onions to celebrate the spring, the coming of spring, and that they would bite into sweet onions like an apple. Well, how do you consume onions in your life? Do you have a tradition? Do you have a way of dealing with onions? I want to ask you about some of these ordinances that you write about in the book, Mark. You say in Nacogdoches, Texas, there's an ordinance against young women eating raw onions after 6 p.m. Does this go into what you were talking about earlier about how people thought that onions would make people amorous in some way?
I'm not sure. It might be that, but it might also be just this prejudice against people eating raw onions. These researchers at Texas A&M came up with all these laws all over the country. And I called these towns, and nobody had ever heard of anybody ever enforcing any of these laws, but it's
the onion police.
Yeah, you know, it's I come from New England, and I know, you know, in New England there are all sorts of strange laws on the books that nobody ever enforces. Somebody who's in the right position and has some pet peeve. And apparently there's a lot of people who are bothered by women eating raw onions. It's usually women.
Yeah, that's what conservatives do. They want to control women's bodies. In Richland, exactly. South Carolina, a woman weighing more than 200 pounds, it's illegal for that person to be eating onions in a restaurant or in a public picnic if she is wearing shorts. Okay?
Yeah.
That's really a thing.
A lot about that.
Okay. All right, let's go to a caller, and we have Mark on the line. And Mark, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, David. Mark, you talked about what onions do to people's eyes and all. When I was really young, my parents had restaurants, and us kids, my brother, sister, and I always wanted to help in the kitchen. We wanted to be part of it, put our aprons on and all. And Dad and Mom would give us a bowl, cutting board, a bowl full of onions, a cutting board, and a knife. And by the time we got cutting that first onion, we were done working in the kitchen, and out we went. So anyway, just wanted to share that and really enjoyed the conversation about onions.
Mark, I like that story. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Any reaction to that, Mark?
Well, yeah. I mean,
that's smart.
You know, it's like in
that's
the,
a smart
it's
parent.
Like it's like in the military, you know. It's like the guy, MKP, the guy way down at the bottom of the run who gets stuck with chopping the onions.
Got another caller, Adriana. Adriana, you're on the air.
Hi. I had a, it was told to me as an old wives' tale, but I can attest it's true. Whenever you have the flu, if you slice an onion in half, put them in your socks, like right under your heels, and just, if you're not going anywhere, you're sick. So just wear those around the house. And it I don't know what or why, but it did, and it does work. And I've also heard, since that happened, I've heard if you just slice an onion and leave it open in a room in a dish, that somehow it soaks up germs or whatever in the room. I don't know about that, but the sock thing works.
All right. Well, there's a lot of mythology about the curing abilities, the medical abilities of onions, Mark.
Yeah, a lot of these things. And there's a Celtic belief that leeks, if you put leeks in your shoes, it staves off illness. And somebody recently told me that they were taking a trip in Egypt, a cruise on the Nile, and they got COVID. And all the Egyptians kept saying, eat onions, eat lots of onions. Now, I don't think onions really do cure COVID. But interesting that all these people thought so.
Better than horse dewormer, I imagine. But so what's the difference between an onion, a leek, and a shallot?
Well, they're different. They're different species.
Of onions.
Yeah.
So they're all related.
They're all related in the same family.
But onions are related to the lily? They're like a bulb, like a tulip?
Well, this is something, you know, botanists, if you look at these histories, botanists change their minds from time to time. So it was always, onions were always considered in the lily family. But in recent years, they've decided, they've made up a different name for the family of onions and said they aren't in the lily family anymore because, after all, lilies don't spit in your eye.
At least, no, yeah. So you have these historical recipes in the book, and they're fascinating, and they're sometimes perplexing. You know, you have onion pudding. Tell us about that.
Well, it's important to understand that desserts are a relatively modern concept. So all these things like puddings and pies and cakes were originally not sweet things. They were savory dishes and often made with onions. But an onion pudding was not a sweet dish. And just like an onion pie wasn't a sweet dish, and onion cakes weren't sweet dishes either. Some people do make, somebody recently made me a pie in Georgia, a sweet pie that was with onions. They do things like that in Georgia.
And how was it? 1 to 10.
It was not bad. It was not bad. It was sweet and dessert-like, and just had this kind of subtle undertone of onions.
Okay. Let's go to a caller. We have Scott on the line. He's got an onion thing to tell us. Go for it, Scott.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. I wanted to first start off by saying I love onions, raw onions, cooked onions, any kind of onion is great. But when y'all brought up Hemingway's onion sandwich, the first thing I thought of that my grandpa told me about, you know, he's almost 90. And back in the 30s, during the Depression, a recipe, and I did some research, and it was a pretty widespread thing to make peanut butter stuffed onions.
Was it cooked onion?
Yeah, so probably what you're supposed to do, and, you know, believe it or not, I think at the time, the first lady, Roosevelt's wife, actually did a whole, like, speech on it, but you're supposed to take a whole onion and kind of hollow out the middle of it and then just stuff it full of peanut butter and pop it in the oven.
Yeah, okay. Well, there's
Scott, thank you for the call.
There's many stuffed onion recipes, so why not peanut butter? But there's stuff with meat and stuff with vegetables, and in a lot of different cultures, there's stuffed onions is a thing.
Let's go to one more caller. We have Chip on the line, and Chip, you're on the air.
Hi. My father ate at least one slice of onion with every meal I ever saw him eat for his entire life, and I really didn't get it until I aged a little bit. But the best onions I've ever seen were from the valley, from a place called Weta Grove Farms. And they were so sweet. It was like apple soup. And if you're interested in any of the recipes that Julia Childs put up, one of her most important meals was French onion soup. And we're so lucky to live in a valley where the place where these onions could be grown. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Chip. Appreciate you telling us that. And we are lucky to have such culinary opportunities. I mean, it's one of the things, you know, we have so much good music around us all the time. We have such good food around us all the time. This is something that the people who lived before us didn't get to enjoy. And we live in a fantastic time, Mark.
Yeah, and that last caller is an illustration of what I was saying about how, you know, some people have certain onions that they particularly like that, you know, they may know the farm where it comes from. And I don't have that luxury. I live in Manhattan. There's not a lot of onion growers around me.
Yeah, so you say that they are, onion is a, has a, terroir is the word that you use?
Terroir, yeah.
And so it's like a grape, where it is, the location where it is, the type of soil, the climate that it enjoys will determine, you know, how sweet it will be, the consistency, the quality of the onion. So, yeah, if you have a particular place that you like, that's why.
Right. And it's also why it's hard to reproduce cooking from different places, Indian cooking, for instance. It's a hot climate, and Indian onions are very strong. And if you want to make Indian food that tastes authentic, you have to get these kind of strong onions, as opposed to Japan, where onions are always very mild. And these are examples of how climate dictates culture.
So you're right. We're almost out of time here, but these sauces, these cream sauces for onions, you think that they should have a comeback? We should bring back the onion sauce.
Yes, and creamed onions. Bring back creamed onions. Creamed onions used to be a basic dish for Thanksgiving, and I've been traveling around with this book and talking to people, and hardly anybody has creamed onions anymore. I'd like to see creamed onions make a comeback, and also vichyssoise soup.
That's like cold potato soup.
Cold potato onion cream soup. It's great.
And so, yeah, we all have these foods that we love and enjoy. And the onion future is secured. There's no threat to the onion happening these days, is there?
No. The only thing I see
worrisome on the horizon is they're trying to develop a stingless onion.
Oh.
And, you know, that's going to be like...
I think there's something in Revelations about that being one of the reasons for the apocalypse.
So. Yeah, well, it's like alcohol-free beer, you know.
Well, you know. All right, well, Mark Kurlansky is the author of The Core of an Onion, Peeling the Rarest Common Food, featuring more than 100 historical recipes. Mark, it was so much fun talking to you today.
Great talking to you, David.
And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted and produced by David Martin Davies. Kayla Padilla is our booking and engagement producer. Engineering support from Ruben Garcia, Jesse Reeves, and Steve Short. Dan Katz is TPR's Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.